Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, and welcome back to another episode of Helpful Hints with me, Mr. Hints. Today, we're going to look at the atom and what makes it up, as well as the important discoveries which led us to the current model. So, get yourself comfortable, and we will begin. We start with some stuff you should be familiar with from chemistry. Atoms make up literally everything. You are atoms, the headphones you're listening with are atoms, the air that you're breathing in is in fact atoms. But the thing about these atoms is that they are tiny. We're talking about tiny, tiny spheres with a radius of about 1 times 10 to the minus 10 meters, which is a number that you need to know. What's even crazier is we can go even smaller than that, looking at what makes up these atoms. We call these subatomic particles. Make sure you know what is meant by this term, as they'll ask it in this way. Sub means below, like a submarine is below the water, so subatomic is below the level of the atom. There are three subatomic particles. Within something called the nucleus lies the protons and the neutrons. They both have roughly the same atomic mass. Because we're dealing with really small things, it would take ages to try and say their masses in kilograms and they'd be very, very small numbers. So instead, we talk about them relative to each other, so relative atomic mass. Both the proton and the neutron have a relative atomic mass of 1. However, the protons have a charge associated with them, which is positive. You can imagine this in a similar way to a magnet, so basically protons all want to repel from each other. A neutron, however, is neutral, as the name might suggest. It does not have a charge. They actually exist to help with keeping the nucleus together, like a glue, as otherwise all of the protons would just want to repel from each other. This nucleus forms most of the mass of the atom, but is still a very small part of it in terms of size. Its radius is about 1/10,000th that of the atom itself, so again, very small. Orbiting around the nucleus are the electrons. These are very small compared to the size of the protons or neutrons. We say the relative atomic mass is about 1/2,000th that of the protons and the neutrons. They have a negative charge, so protons and electrons are attracted to each other as they have the opposite charge. You hopefully before this point have learnt in chemistry that these electrons orbit the nucleus in shells, or what's called energy levels. Well, you might not have learnt that they can actually move between these energy levels. For some reason, this is just a single specification point, but I've seen it asked in several past papers. It is very interesting and helps to explain some cool things, which you can actually learn more about in A-level physics. If we fire some energy at this atom in the form of electromagnetic radiation, which you will learn about in future episodes, then the electron can absorb this radiation. In doing so, it moves to a higher energy level, which means it moves further away from the nucleus. We call this its excited state. It can then emit this energy back down to a lower energy level and move closer to the nucleus. We call this de-exciting or relaxing. All the different elements do this differently with different amounts of energy. We can use this information almost like a fingerprint to help us work out how far away galaxies are and what they're made of, and, for more simple reasons, light our homes. Provide this electron with enough energy and we can actually ionise the atom. This is where the electron then is lost elsewhere. Normally, an atom is going to have an overall charge of neutral or nothing, as it will have the same number of protons as it does electrons. But now, if we lose an electron, we have more positive charges, i.e. the number of protons, than we do negative charges, i.e. the number of electrons. So, therefore, we have become a positively charged ion. It's really easy, and I see a lot of students making this mistake, to think that if we lose something, we go negative. But we need to think about the charges here. We have more positive than negative, so now, overall, we become positive. You need to be able to work out from a diagram or from the symbols with numbers, like on a periodic table, how many protons, neutrons, and electrons an atom may have. Just to confuse us a bit, we'll need to do some maths. Looking at a periodic table, we see by each symbol there are two numbers. So let's take sodium, for example. Sodium has the symbol Na. The top number next to Na reads 23. This is what's called the mass number. It tells us how heavy, relatively speaking, one atom of sodium is. And what gives us the mass in an atom? The protons and neutrons. So the mass number is the total number of protons and neutrons combined. In our case, we have a total of 23 protons and neutrons. not 23 protons and 23 neutrons, but 23 in total. We don't know yet the proportion. The bottom number should read 11. This is what's called the atomic number, sometimes referred to as proton number. It's purely the number of protons in that atom. So sodium has 11 protons. Here's where the maths can come into it. If we know the number of protons and the number of protons plus neutrons, then we can work out just the number of neutrons. In this case, 23 minus 11 is 12. So this atom of sodium has 12 neutrons. For an atom, we have the same number of electrons as protons, so 11. Note that this will be different if they ask about an ion, but I'm hoping your chemistry is up to scratch enough to work that out. In all of these definitions, I'm being careful to say that this particular atom of sodium has however many number of protons and neutrons. That's because some atoms, even of the same element, can have a different atomic mass. However, an atom of an element will always have the same number of protons. So the only thing that can change is the number of neutrons. You may have heard of things like carbon-14. So that is a carbon atom, which is 6 protons, and 8 neutrons, because 6 add 8 is 14. Well, you can also have nitrogen-14, so both with the same atomic mass of 14, but nitrogen-14 has 7 protons, as nitrogen will always have 7 protons, and therefore is going to have 7 neutrons. We call these isotopes, and you need to know the definition. An isotope of an element is an atom with the same number of protons, but a different number of neutrons. Now this is all well and good, but obviously we haven't always known about this. Since ancient Greek times, we have thought that things were made up of small spheres called atomos. See where we can get the modern name from. We thought these spheres couldn't be divided into any smaller things, up until we discovered something smaller, the electron. So with the face of new evidence, we had to come up with a new model of how things are made. This led to a man called J.J. Thompson eating a dessert. The plum pudding model, as it came to be known, was the new model. We knew about this idea of neutral atoms, so that had to be maintained. Much like a plum pudding, or to put it in the context of more modern day, a Christmas pudding, suggested that an atom was a ball of positive charge, like the sponge, and the electrons are the bits of fruit embedded in it. Again, in the absence of any evidence to say otherwise, we accepted this as the best model for the time. Then, along came Rutherford, who had two students working for him, called Geiger and Marsden. They were conducting experiments using alpha particles and very thin gold foil. Alpha particles, as we will see later, are just two protons and two neutrons, or a helium nucleus. Importantly, though, they are positively charged. Rutherford and his students fired these alpha particles at the thin gold foil. In theory, then, they should have just passed straight through the thin gold foil to the other side. And for the most part, this is what they did. However, some got detected to the side, and some, but even less, got detected right back towards the detector. This meant that the plum pudding model could not be correct, and so they concluded the following. The atom has a mass which is concentrated within the centre, which is what they called the nucleus. This was because most of the alpha particles went straight through. This nucleus, though, must also be charged because some of the alpha particles were deflected. We're not done yet, though, as we now have some more questions than before, but we are in a golden age of discovery, and the next things to lead us to the current nuclear model happen rather quickly after each other, within about 20 years. Someone called Bohr now arrives, and he came up with the idea of electrons orbiting at specific distances around the nucleus. He did some theoretical calculations, and these agreed with some experimental data. Fantastic. The positive charge of a nucleus can go into smaller subdivisions, so we reckon there is a particle which does this, and let's call it the proton. Rutherford came up and discovered this one. And finally, to complete the picture, Chadwick finds out about the neutron, and so we end up with our current nuclear model. There's a lot of theory involved in this section, but I hope that this has cleared some things up. Next episode, we will look at the radiation emitted from atoms if they become unstable. See you then, and thanks for listening.